It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice.
Good morning.
Hello, Dr. Cannon.
What do you have to ask the vet this morning?
I have an official question from Alan in New Milford and an unofficial question from Jill in Sharon. Which would you like first?
You choose.
Jill from Sharon. Can dogs eat edamame?
Yes, they can. I mean, I don't see why not. I think everything, because it's a soy product.
That's what I was asking.
Yeah, I don't think it would bother them.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I don't think that. Did your dogs get into your edamame? Jill and Sharon?
No comment.
Okay.
No comment. All right, so Alan in New Milford, and it was the blind one. She's just relentless.
She loves veggies.
I think she just likes discovery. She likes flushing food. She's a flushing dog.
The nice thing about them getting into vegetables, they usually don't eat the container. It's the dogs who eat the container because it's coated with chicken grease.
I know. That
becomes a problem.
All right. Now, Alan in New Milford, can dogs get giardia from swimming in a creek and then licking themselves?
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the giardia cysts are in the water, or maybe in the water. I mean, it's not, I don't believe that it's a common situation, but potentially could be in the water. And so at any time that they're going to get water in the mouth, in the gut, is where you would get infected with giardia.
All right. And do you have any, just out of curiosity, how long does it take?
I believe it's a couple of weeks for the oocysts to, they have to invade the lining of the intestine and before they cause some problems.
The reason I'm asking is, does it take any less time for, does it take any less time for if you're just swimming? Or is it pretty much 2 weeks?
You know what? I don't know exactly, but I would guess, but by having a knowledge of the way parasites work, I think it's going to take them a little while to actually cause a problem, because they have to cause cysts in the intestine, and so they usually need to go through a phase in order to do that, and then you have to wait a while to get that inflammation, and then you get the diarrhea.
Gotcha.
And sometimes vomiting.
All right, in other words, you can't.
It's not going to be the next day.
That's what I'm going for, because so many things, there's so many people actually analyze things. Well, this is what happened yesterday. Like, No. I don't want to know what happened yesterday. I want to know what happened a week ago. And that's really what I was going for.
Right, so it wouldn't be a day or two, no.
Okay. Nicolette in Saugerties. I'm not much of a pet person. Our 10-year-old son keeps goldfish. He started out with 4 of them. They were doing okay, and then all at once, one by one, they started getting sick and dying. We don't know why. But what happened yesterday is my neighbor's cat Muffins got in and caught the last one. In fact, I walked in on Muffins eating it. It wasn't a happy moment. Anyway, we don't know why the goldfish were ailing, so we don't know if my neighbor's cat is in trouble health-wise. What do you think?
Well, I think that goldfish questions aren't fair to ask a veterinarian. I'm not sure that I know very much about goldfish more than you do. And my educated guess would be that if the kitty is fine now, it probably won't be a problem. If your neighbor's cat Muffins is still alive, then probably not a problem. All I know about with goldfish is ichthyosis, which I think is a fungus. The interesting thing is that there probably are very few cross-species problems. Even a fungus, I wouldn't think, would be that went down a cat's gullet would be a problem more than vomiting, but I don't know that for sure. Not a fair question.
All right.
I'm gonna back out of that.
All right, good job on backing out of it, and I'm certainly not much more use, because I was once, I didn't realize that my sister's goldfish were being kept in distilled water, so I changed the water and...
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was bad. So, as I said...
Maybe that's what happened here.
I was just... right. That, you know, I didn't think of that. That's probably, though, what happened.
Yeah, and goldfish are pretty hardy, is my understanding.
They are. They are. I mean, you know...
Until
somebody comes along and does something really helpful.
To unbalance.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tasha in New York City, there is a ton of construction dust in my neighborhood, and since it's hot, the fan's always sucking dust into the apartment. It's been really hard on my two indoor cats. Their eyes look goopy and irritated. I got to the vet and get medicine. It clears up, and then it starts up again in a couple of weeks. Can you give a cat regular eye drops like Visine?
Not Visine, but you can use... So for cats and dogs who get lots of debris in their eyes, and especially the cats and dogs who have protruding eyeballs tend to pick up more, then you can rinse them with an eye flush. So a human eye wash would be okay to use, and rinsing them out, especially maybe toward the end of the day, with several drops of eye wash is not a bad idea. The eye drops, you know, you don't need an antibiotic if you're just getting dust from irritation. You need to get rid of the dust, or some animals will also need a little bit of a corticosteroid, but you have to be super careful with that, because if you have an ulcer or a scratch on the eyeball, that can make it worse. So my recommendation always is, how can we solve the problem at the beginning rather than treat the problem at the end? And I wonder if there's a fan with a filter or some other way to stop all that dust from coming in.
Yeah, that becomes hard. Can you get little kitty goggles?
That's an idea, too.
No,
maybe an air conditioner. Would that stop the dust from coming in? I know that's not easy in an apartment.
And it also depends on how old it is and how sealed and how not sealed. Why not Visine? There used to be something called Dacryus, which was great. And it was an eye wash for humans, and I used it on dogs, cats. It was fantastic. And then it just disappeared. And I've had trouble except in the, I should know this. There is a line of eye products, you know, for contacts, etc. Mm-hmm. And they have something similar, but it was never as it's just more designed for humans. The Dacryus bottle, such as it was a squirt bottle, plastic, but it worked for any. It worked for dog eyes as well as for human eyes.
Well, the Visine has a drug in it that constricts blood vessels.
No, that's not good.
So we don't want that to happen. But the best product that I've used is the Vetirsin eye wash, and it used to come. So Vetirsin has antimicrobial activity without having an antibiotic in it, and it is soothing and so works quite well for this kind of thing. But
and they have it for cats, because I'm just looking.
It came up until about 2 weeks ago. It came in small bottles that you could hold in your hand, which I loved. You could put it in like an eye drop. But now it comes in bigger bottles, just like the rest of the eye wash clan. And I find that it's hard to manipulate into putting into a small animal's eye. But you could always put some in a dropper, in a new dropper bottle, and use a dropper from it, or just figure out how to manipulate that bigger bottle.
Right. Well, first, as soon as you can, you'll be able to give instructions to the rest of us.
Well, I can do it. I can do it. It's just that you waste a lot.
Right. No, I hate to say that I'm one of those humans that wastes a lot no matter what, holding my head back trying to figure out how to get whatever it is. But it's just, yeah. All right, Corbin and Jesse in Colren, Massachusetts. We have a dog, two cats, and a hamster. So, of course, people are always asking us if we will foster an animal until they find a home. Usually we say okay if the animal is healthy. We're on the fence about this kitten that has a bad case of mange. He's in good shape otherwise, so we'd like to help out, but how can we take the little guy in without our whole menagerie catching it? And what about the kids? We've got a 4-year-old and a newborn.
I think I probably wouldn't advise Well, number one, there are three kinds of mange that cats can get, so we don't know what kind it is. If it's demodectic mange, which is all of the mange in cats, is pretty rare, pretty unusual. Demodectic mange is something that's not contagious. So it sounds to me as though someone's made it clear that it is. The other thing is that we want to make sure that this is a clear diagnosis of mange, that it didn't just come from the rescue, that they've taken this cat to the vet and had a clear diagnosis, because the most common thing for a kitten to have is ringworm. And you don't want to bring a cat with ringworm into your house with little kids, because everybody could end up with it, and your pets as well. So let's make sure we have a clear diagnosis and what kind of mange it is. So demodectic mange is not contagious. Ringworm is contagious, caused by a fungus. Sarcoptic mange, I'm trying to remember the name of the mite in cats, but anyway, it's Sarcoptes, same type of mange that dogs can get. And that is very highly contagious. And so Notoedrys is the other one that is pretty highly contagious as well. It's probably the most common mange that cats get, even though it's uncommon for them to get it. And those are pretty easily treated these days with the medications we have. You can use Revolution on mange and apply it once, and then I usually use it again in 2 weeks instead of waiting a month, and it works quite well. If you've got a kitten who's really crusted over with yellow crusting, which can happen with the Notoedrys, then you want to really clean all that off. But in any case, I would find out really what's going on. If the kitten has a clear diagnosis from the vet of having demodectic mange, that's more of an immune system issue with the kitten. Bringing it into a stressful environment with lots of other critters is not the best thing for the kitten, unless you're going to keep him in a completely separate room, which would be sort of an extra bathroom or bedroom or laundry room.
Right. So if you have a foster area, if they have a foster area where they do this, then mostly make sure it's not ringworm, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely, not ringworm. But if it truly is mange, you know, it should be on the way to getting a lot better already. Yeah. If it's had one dose of medication. So sarcoptic mange and even demodectic mange is now pretty treatable, certainly in dogs. Cats with Revolution, pretty treatable. You shouldn't need to do all of the lime sulfur dips and all that stinky stuff anymore.
Okay. So, all right. So it's.
But very contagious. So
if it's that particular, if it's that particular type.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's very kind of these people who to even consider with a newborn taking in a foster.
Right.
But you can blow up in your face, so to speak.
Yeah. All right. Scout in Danbury. I was hanging out on the back porch with Toofer and Toby, also known as my 16-year-old male kitty and my year-old house bunny, and we were both getting pretty bitten up pretty bad by mosquitoes. Now I'm kind of wondering if either of my little friends, could catch a disease from mosquito bites the way people can, like West Nile or malaria, etc.
It is possible for kitties to get heartworm disease from mosquitoes, but they will. Malaria is not in this area, in Danbury, but West Nile, of course, certainly. Eastern equine encephalitis, West Nile virus. Although I haven't heard much about that, and that is not transmissible to cats. So the things that I would think about with the bunny, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. Rabbits certainly don't get heartworm disease that I know of, and neither do they get those, are they susceptible to those encephalitis viruses. Cats are not either, but they can get heartworm disease. It's not common in cats. It's much more common to happen in dogs. And even so, this part of the country, not so prevalent to have heartworm. In the South, it's much more prevalent. So I wouldn't worry about it if it's a one-time out on the porch. But if it's a repeated thing, then, there are lots of mosquitoes, then I would just not take the critters out there in the evening.
And same deal for the bunny?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't know that the mosquitoes can really get through that bunny fur.
Yeah.
To bite them, but I certainly wouldn't risk it with my cat if there were lots of mosquitoes to do that sort of every day. Besides the fact that Scout is taking a chance of catching something like EEE
himself.
And himself.
Or herself, right? And then we can just add to that 16-year-old male kitty.
Right.
Which is, you know, getting up there. So whereas it doesn't mean, you know, you just want to be a little more.
Right. Good question. But those mosquito days are coming to an end.
Yes,
now.
They sure are. In the dark. I'm going to genetically engineer a new type of mosquito. All right. Luke in Canaan. Do thermal blankets for dogs really work? What's the story with them? I can't tell if it's just hype. There are a few kinds, some called self-warming, some called thermal. Some are quilted and some are like shiny silver space material. It's hard to ask a dog if it's really warm enough, but mine like to sleep on the porch, so if they work, I'll shell out the big bucks.
So is this a blanket that you're talking about, a blanket or a coat that you would put on the dog?
Okay. It looks like a blanket. I'm just reading the. I'm reading the.
Those shiny thermal blankets do work well to keep heat in, but you have to have a dog who's going to stay in one spot, and/or be able to get back under the blanket. So yeah, I think that they do work pretty well. And this is ostensibly, I would guess, for a dog who's going to be living outdoors or out on the porch.
I guess. But out on the porch because they like it on the porch.
Well, dogs, in my experience, some dogs love to be outside and, in fact, don't want to come in. Those dogs that have so much heat in their bodies and they frequently have poodle hair type hair,
right.
And they don't want to come inside. And you just have to make them come in because you don't want to leave them out there with the coyotes all night. But so if they prefer to be out, sometimes they don't really, are not going to use a blanket. But I think, you know, if you want your dog to, if the dog really wants to stay out on the porch, of course, they're safer from the critters. You know, how are they going to, when they get cold enough, get out underneath of a blanket? So that's really, I guess, the big question.
Right.
Or maybe just lying on top of it. So on top of one of those shiny blankets isn't going to help at all. It just reflects back the body heat and traps it in.
So that wouldn't do it.
I'm not sure my answer is very helpful.
No, that's actually that makes sense. So it's like unless you can get them underneath it, don't waste the money. Is my assessment of what you're saying.
Right, and you know it does.
Lying on it doesn't. Lying on it as you would lie on a dog bed isn't going to do the
trick. But if you put one of those dog beds out with the sides on it. And it fits the dog pretty well. Then if it gets down, you know, if they're outside and it gets down, you've got a dog with a really good coat, and it gets down to be 40 or something, they can curl up on the bed. So it really is kind of a judgment call. If you've got an old dog, absolutely not.
Right. Okay. And now Ellery in Litchfield, when my boyfriend and I first got our 6-year-old coonhound, Beulah, he was big on feeding her treats. So many treats. His go-to was cheese, and Beulah got chunky, so I started making him give her only low-calorie dog treats. But she has a sensitive stomach, and those don't really agree with her. So finally I got him to compromise with carrots. Luckily, Beulah loves carrots. But is there such a thing as too many carrots for a dog?
Yes, there's such a thing as too many of anything. So everything, and I say this every show, everything in moderation. I sound like my mother. I think that a couple of carrots a day for an average-sized dog would be plenty of carrots. The carrots are sugary, and they're very high fiber, especially if they're, you know, raw carrots. And so it depends on what your dog can tolerate. You know, the key here is really why do we feel the need to give treats all the time. I am going to get up on my soapbox and talk about having an empty stomach being a really healthy thing for everybody. snacking all the time is not good for your gut bacteria. So if you want to have a healthy immune system and you want to have a healthy gut, then meal feeding is the way to go. And so, you know, twice a day I'm okay with, but doing a snack every hour in between there, you're somewhat defeating the purpose. So we have to get over this whole snacking thing. If, in fact, you're using them for training with a young dog, then it's completely understandable. But when they're full grown, you know, maybe a biscuit when they come in at night, maybe a biscuit if you need to do that when they come in, or a treat of some kind when they come in from outside in the morning, because you need to get them in to go to work, that's okay. But this constant feeding is probably one of the worst things you can do for a dog, not only for their weight, but also for their intestines, for the micro flora in the intestine. And so limiting the treats is a really good idea. It doesn't even matter to me what they are. Seems interesting that the low-fat treats would be irritating when cheese isn't.
I'm struck by that as well.
Yeah, but carrots, I think, are a good idea, carrots and green beans, for a little added fiber. But you have to really do it in moderation. So if you've got a 50-pound dog, I would say 2 carrots, no more than that, 2 full-size carrots.
And I will just say that I was one of the first people to discover there is such a thing as a carrot overdose. I've discovered in practice both carrot overdose and green bean overdose. And one was feline and one was canine. Not necessarily in this order. And so I have to say thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you for having me today.
And this has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.